Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths Radio. As you can probably tell, this is not Yada. Yada is on vacation with his family this week and has asked me to sit in for him on a few shows. Larry's going to sit in for him on a few shows. He may have already, I'm not sure when these are going to air and in what order we are pre-recording. So, by way of introduction, my name is James Bowen, and I was on a few weeks before, sometime in mid-February, Yada had me on to kind of introduce me a little bit, and we discussed my past. So if you're interested, you can listen to that show. I'm joined today by my lovely wife, Patty. Patty, would you say hello?
Hello.
And she's here for moral support as much as anything else because I am not a public speaker. In fact, I am a technology person, which means I sit in a single room by myself looking at a computer screen most of the day and avoid human interaction. So this is a bit out of my forte. But what I do have is a love of Yah's word and a lot of free time I've been studying it. So hopefully I bring something to the conversation. When Yada first asked me to do this, we originally intended to do three shows and try and dedicate one each to the upcoming Mikra, Passover, Matzah, and Unleavened Bread. But because of a series of calls on the show and emails that were received, we decided that something that is related and equally as important should be discussed first. And so we're going to dedicate this entire show to a single topic. So there will be no news and review, no current event. We are dedicating it entirely to the topic of circumcision. One of the five terms and conditions of the covenant. So what we're going to do is Yada and I did a show on Blog Talk Radio about 3 years ago on this topic, and what we tried to do there was examine every verse in the Torah of Prophets where Yah mentioned circumcision so we could get an idea of what Yah's view on circumcision is. And we did a 2.5-hour show on that, I believe, and it was a lot of people found it useful and helpful, so we wanted to kind of update that. And what I did with that one was I went through and found every verse where the word mul, which is the Hebrew word for circumcision, was used, and we examined every one of those verses. Well, something hit me when I was doing my research on this and trying to refresh myself, and that is that there's another word that is related, and that's the word arel, which literally means having foreskin or uncircumcised. And I didn't examine the verses where that was mentioned, so we kind of left that out. Oversight on our part. And I wanted to rectify that with this one. So this time I have every verse where mul is spoken of and every verse where arel is spoken of. So we get an idea of what God's view on circumcision is and what his view on being uncircumcised is. And like I said, I'm not a radio person. I'm not a writer. So what I'm doing to make this a little more comfortable for myself is I'm having my wife join me. And rather than presenting this like a radio show, what I'm going to try and do is just present it to her like I would whenever I come across something I find interesting in my research. She's the first person I want to go tell it to. So she's the one I asked to join me. And she's going to do pretty much what comes natural to her, which is listen to what I have to say, challenge me, agree with me, whatever comes to her mind. So that's kind of the presentation we're going to be using for this episode or this show, and I hope you enjoy it and it works. So unless you have something to add, if you want to give a little bit of your background real quick, Patty?
I think I'm okay.
You're okay? For the background, quick, brief background on both of us. I come from an atheist agnostic point of view. Patty comes from a more religious Christian point of view.
I suppose I could give them that background. So I grew up in the Lutheran church and very Christian. I wanted to go off and be a missionary and had even thought about joining the convent at one point in my life. So we have very different and opposite backgrounds.
Yes. But what's great about that is the fact that we both examined the same evidence, Yah's Torah, and came to the exact same conclusion, coming from such very differing backgrounds. And what was great was we got to do it together. We were coming through all this while we were dating, so it was probably the most frequent topic of conversation we had. So that's our background, and that's where we're coming from. So let's go ahead and jump in, and we find the first time that the word circumcision is mentioned, Yah brings it up in Bereshit, Genesis. And we're going to kind of sneak up on it, and we're going to start with Genesis 17, verse 9. So if anyone wants to follow along, we read, And God Almighty said to Abraham, and as for you, you should continuously and habitually observe, Shamar, you should carefully consider, diligently and consistently paying especially close attention to the details, so that you understand, care about, revere, and are kept preserved by my family-oriented covenant relationship, my Bereth. You and your seed after you, throughout their generations, dwelling places and eras of time. This one and only, Zeth, singular, unique, and specific, family-oriented covenant relationship of mine, Bereth, which relationally you should continuously and habitually observe, Shamar, between me and between you, and between your offspring, following you. You must circumcise, Mul, shall absolutely cut off and remove the foreskin of the penis. Accordingly, your every male, for them to remember, Zakar, and you shall cut off and separate your foreskin's association with the flesh, and this will exist as a sign to remember, Ulam, an example to visually illustrate and explain the symbol and standard, the pledge, insignia as tension and proof of the miraculous nature of the family-oriented covenant relationship between me and between you. And a son of the eighth day you shall circumcise. You shall cut off and separate his foreskin with regard to every male, masculine individual throughout your dwelling places and generations, those naturally born, those naturalized as a member of an extended family in the home, and those really wanting, K-Stop, deeply desiring to be acquired and included, Mikna, purchased and obtained from every son of foreign lands, which relationally are not from your seed. He must absolutely circumcise, cutting off the foreskin of his penis, Mul, Mul. Something people should know, I'm sure y'all have discussed this many times. When you see a word repeated in Hebrew like this, Mul, Mul, it serves to amplify, intensify the meaning and the necessity of something. So he must absolutely be circumcised. Those of the naturally born in your home, and also those really wanting to be, kasap, deeply desiring to be included, mikna, acquired and purchased, as well as those acquired with your money. This shall be my family-oriented covenant relationship, Bereth, in the flesh, serving as an everlasting and an eternal family-oriented covenant relationship. And the uncircumcised, Arel, the stubborn, unresponsive, untrusting, and unreliant, the unlistening and unobserving, the uncut off, the unset apart, and unseparated male, who relationally is not circumcised, Lomul, with regard to the flesh of their foreskin, those souls, keep in mind, this is nephesh here, souls, not individuals, those souls shall be cut off, be excluded and banished, karat, shall be severed and cut down from her family. By way of association, they have violated and broken, disassociating themselves from my family-oriented covenant relationship, Bereth. So there's the first introduction of the concept of circumcision in Scripture. And there's a few interesting things to point out as we go through this. And one is, if you're reading in any English translation, you're not going to find the words, those really wanting to be, deeply desiring and strongly yearning to be included. You're not going to find that, and there's a reason. The reason is the Masoretic text was a vocalization of the Hebrew. Now, this wasn't needed, as every word was pronounceable well before then. If you think about it, the idea that God wrote in a language that wasn't pronounceable when he continuously tells us to read and recite would make no sense. So the language was pronounceable, but what the Masoretes did when they vocalized it was they narrowed the meaning. Several words have multiple meanings, and what they tried to do was say, well, if you pronounce it this way, it has this meaning, and if you pronounce it that way, it has this meaning. But in reality, in the Hebrew language, without the vowel pointing, the words were identical. And that's what we have with the words K-Stop Mi'kmaq. K-Stop, which we translated here as those really wanting to be, deeply desiring, strongly yearning, and passionately longing, is also the Hebrew word for money, silver, or, you know, any type of precious metal. So, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I found, if you want me to read a new international version of those same verses.
Okay.
For comparison.
Huh? That sounds like a good juxtaposition. Let's see how they translated it.
The 17:9 is where we started. It says, then God said to Abraham, as for you, you must keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you for the generations to come. This is my covenant with you and your descendants after you, the covenant you are to keep. Every male among you shall be circumcised. You are to undergo circumcision, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and you. For the generations to come, every male among you who is 8 days old must be circumcised, including those born in your household or bought with money from a foreigner, those who are not your offspring. Whether born in your household or bought with your money, they must be circumcised. My covenant in your flesh is to be an everlasting covenant. Any uncircumcised male who has not been circumcised in the flesh will be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant.
Now, even in an English translation, it's impossible to read that and, in my opinion, come to a conclusion other than circumcision is 100% necessary, which is completely juxtaposed, you know, and completely incongruous with Paul's claim that it would be no good. And I hear the music coming in that we're going to a commercial, so we'll pick up here when we return and discuss the K-Stop viewing probably Genesis chapter 17, verses 9 through 14, and Yah's position on the topic of circumcision. Patty had just read to us the, was that the New International version of the translation?
Yes.
Okay, and we were talking about how even there it's almost impossible to come up with a different conclusion than Yah's 100% you have to be circumcised. Could you come up with another conclusion from that?
No, I would say that probably most Christians would say he was speaking to Abraham, and so being that we were grafted in, I could see them arguing that we weren't descendants of Abraham, and so we don't necessarily have to be circumcised. But that gets into a whole other subject, I suppose.
So actually, that's probably the single biggest challenge I hear whenever this topic comes up, is that, you know, this was only speaking to Abraham and his descendants, and since I'm not descendant of Abraham, it doesn't matter to me. And that actually goes back to what we were examining right before you read that, which is the K-Stop Mi'kmaq portion, which is translated in most as purchase with money. And we were talking about, I was talking about how, if you look, K-Stop can mean money, but it can also mean that to be, to really want, or to desire, or yearn, or be passionately longing for something. And the word Mi'kmaq, which is translated, tends to be translated as acquired, and hence acquired with money, does mean acquired and included. So if you look at K-Stop Mi'kmaq and you put it together, you have two choices. It can be those who are acquired with money or those who are really wanting to be acquired, those who are deeply yearning and strongly desiring to be acquired. And you think about it, we were, you know, those of us who are not descendants of Abraham, we were acquired. Yah paid the penalty for us. You know, Yah paid the ransom to redeem us. And it is because we want to be a part of his family that that applies to us. You know, Yah pays the price, and but it doesn't pay for everyone. It only pays for those who want it to count for them. And so that would be those who deeply desire and yearn to be a part of his family. You know, you're not truly born. We are adopted.
So in the New International Version, we would be the foreigner who is bought with money or born in a household or outside.
They would be those who were purchased, who were bought with money. Well, not even bought with money, because we, K-Stop doesn't necessarily mean money. It just means we desire to be purchased. And
that
not purchased.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's where an English translation is a bit beguiling. And it's not the English translation. It's because they're relying on the Masoretic text. But what's even more, reinforces this is Yahweh tells us, and we understand this, that there is but one covenant. Any uncircumcised man who relationally is not circumcised is cut off from the family. Now, does that say any uncircumcised member of Abraham's family? Does that say any uncircumcised Jew, uncircumcised Israeli? No. It says any uncircumcised man who is relationally not circumcised of the flesh, their soul. It's interesting when Yah uses this word soul, nephesh. It didn't say those individuals, those yish, those enosh. There's three or four different words in Hebrew for conveying man or individual. And he wanted to convey that that person shall be cut off from their physical family. Why would he have used soul? He says those souls shall be cut off and excluded and banished. And then we have from her family. And the Hebrew is she, which is a feminine pronoun. So it is her family, not his family. And really being cut off from your physical family isn't that bad sometimes.
And that's interesting because there's not even really a counterpart to that whole last bit there in the New International Version because it just ends with any uncircumcised male who has not been circumcised in the flesh will be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant.
Yeah. And see, they translate that as they've translated people, which is a valid rendering of Am, which we translated as family or people. In the Hebrew vernacular, it's the same thing. A people or a family. But they completely ignored her. They turned it to his family, didn't they?
His people. Well, in that regard, it's even a lowercase h, which most of the time if they were talking about God or anything in one of these translations, they would capitalize the h. So
exactly.
It doesn't really bring the same significant meaning.
Exactly. But the thing is, you is a feminine word. So how can you translate a feminine pronoun as masculine? Here comes the music, so we'll pick up on that when we return. Welcome back to Shattering Myth. When we left off, we were talking about the fact that the English translation, specifically the one we're referencing is the New International Version, completely changed a feminine pronoun to a masculine one with no basis whatsoever in the translation. And they changed it. The difference is we talk about his being cut off from his family, as you pointed out, with the lowercase h, would be his physical family, his mother, his father, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, etc. But when you look at it in terms of her family, which is what is written in the Hebrew, then you're asking, well, wait, how is a male soul being cut off from her family? Well, if you understand Yah's Torah, you know that there is a her in relation to God's family, and that is the set-apart spirit, the Ruach HaKodesh, who is the spiritual mother. Now, tell me, what would you think? Being cut off from your family, that would be pretty bad. You love your mother and your sisters. That's pretty bad, but, is that really a horrible punishment when you consider the alternative being cut off from God's family? If you had to choose one, which would you choose to be cut off from?
Right. Well, obviously you wouldn't want to be cut off from God's family. But it's also interesting in that the significance of how, the three doors plays into that with becoming a spiritually and eternal being by being associated with her, with the Ruach HaKodesh. And so to be excluded from that, meaning that at the end you would just die?
Well, yeah. If you're cut off apart from Yah's family, the penalty of sin is, or the consequence of sin is death. And your soul will be dead. And that's not a punishment, it's just natural occurrence.
It is interesting that her is translated there, for sure. So should we move on to the next part?
We can do that. Like I said, the her part gets mistranslated because most translators of English translations don't recognize that there is a feminine aspect to God. where they do and they don't fight.
Although I don't know how anybody can read Proverbs and think that there's not a feminine aspect to God, but yeah.
You're pretty clear about that. So, moving on, the next time we come across the word for circumcision, which is mul, is in the 21st chapter of Bereshit, and it's not a, we're not going to get too into it because it's not all that in depth. Well, but all we're told is that Abraham followed Yah's instructions and circumcised his son Yitzchak on the eighth day. So, you know, here we have Abraham following Yahweh's instructions. That's good. And that's, you know, I've always viewed, ever since I started translating myself, particularly, those who don't know, my project has been, I started with the idea of going through, took all the verses that Yada had translated in Yada Yah and combined them together into the, you know, standard biblical order, so to speak. And then I wanted to do is go through and fill in the gaps, translate the verses that he hadn't done. And what I ended up doing was just dropping his verses all together and going through and translating it all myself. And namely, I've been starting at in the beginning, and I'm in Genesis. I've done roughly 34 chapters at this point. But so Abraham is, yeah, I've got to know Abraham's story fairly well, translating it all myself. And to me, Abraham has always been a great example of where we are. You know, Abraham came to know Yah late in his life. He wasn't born into a family that knew Yah. So he came to that. You know, he was given the same terms and conditions of the covenant that we were given and had to choose to embrace that. So to me, he's just a great example to relate to. And so here's a perfect example of relating to it. On the eighth day, he circumcised his son. You know, when Patty and I have children, if we have a male, I will circumcise my son on the eighth day because that is how Yah has asked us to do. That is his instruction. So moving on, the next time we see mul, or circumcision, is in the 34th chapter of Bereshit. And it's not said by Yah, so this isn't what Yah said, but we have a story where we see Yaakov and his sons debating with the Hittite because one of their sisters was with a Hittite man, and he wanted to marry her. And what happened is Yaakov and his sons, you know, talked with them, and their only requirement was that the Hittites had to all be circumcised, that they would not allow their daughter, his daughter, or their sister to marry into them without all of them being circumcised so that they would be like them. So again, not Yah saying it, but Yaakov, that was what he viewed as circumcision. Then we find in the 24th verse of the 4th chapter of Shemot Exodus, we see Yahweh willing to kill Moshe because Moshe failed to circumcise his son. You know, Yah admit, you know, taking Moshe out, had done all this with them. He's in the middle of the plague. This is just prior to the killing of the firstborn. And Moshe has a son and doesn't circumcise him. And Yah is at the point of about to kill him when Moshe's wife comes in and does the job for him. And Yah spares him because of it. So Yah was literally willing to kill Moshe, you know, the scribe of the Torah, because Moshe had not followed through with Yah's instruction to circumcise his son. Then moving on in the 6th chapter, the 12th verse, and then again in the 30th verse, we see, and this isn't speaking necessarily of physical circumcision, but just an idea of how Yah uses the term circumcision, or Moshe in this case. And that he refers to it as Moshe had a speech impediment. Some say it was a stutter. You know, we don't know exactly what it was, but he said he wasn't good. He had a thick tongue and couldn't speak very well. And on these two occasions, he refers to that speech impediment as being of uncircumcised lip. And, you know, we saw back there, the word here is arel, and we saw some pretty, bad or derogatory definitions to arel, which included, I can bring this up again, being stubborn, unresponsive, untrusting, and unreliant. You know, so to have a speech impediment, would be to say his lips were stubborn. His lips were unresponsive, unreliable. So, yeah, it is being used by Moshe in a very negative connotation here. Then we get into God speaking of it again in the 12th chapter of Exodus. And for this, we're going to start in chapter 12, verse 43, which reads, "And Yahweh spoke to Moshe and Aharon the prescribed ordinance, the clearly communicated rule regarding passed over, the process of being passed over, is for every estranged and foreign child to partake in it. But every servant, co-worker, every individual who chooses to, I'm sorry, I misspoke there, was not for every estranged foreign child to partake. I skipped over the low when I read that, but not to partake. So not for everyone, but every associate, every co-worker, every individual who chooses to be included and adopted. This is going back to kiss that mikna again, who chooses, who yearns to be purchased at a price, and who is circumcised at that time, he may partake in it and be nourished by it. So if you're circumcised and you really, you're among the children, you know, you want to be a part of Passover, you can. Temporary residents or hired workers are not to partake in it, not to be nourished by it. Inside one's home and with one's family, only amongst one's household, it will provide nourishment. It may be eaten. You shall not go outside of the family and home, taking the flesh, removing the physical body of the sacrificial lamb outside of the family. So the only way to partake in Passover is to be a part of the family. And as we read there, the only way to be a part of the family, the covenant, the family-oriented covenant relationship, is to be circumcised. And you shall not break or sell its bones. The entire community and witness of Yisrael shall actively engage, celebrate, and profit from this. Now, keep in mind, a lot of people are going to want to go, oh, well, that's only speaking to Israel. Well, what does Israel mean? It's a compound word of Yish, individuals, who, Sarah, strive and contend with, engage and persist with, are set free and empowered by El, God. So, if you don't want to be a part of Yisrael, that's your call. As for me, I'm wanting to be a part of Yisrael. What about you?
Oh, yes.
So, and indeed, when a guest who is living with you and the visitor who is from a different place or culture, the ger, a new arrival on the voyage of discovery, who has walked away from his own nation and family, acts upon and actively engages in, thereby celebrating Passover, to approach Yahweh, every male must be circumcised for him to reach this goal and for him to approach and present himself, for him to draw near and be present. Now, the next show we're going to be doing on this is going to be on the topic of Passover. And we're going to learn a lot about Passover and that. But, you know, needless to say, from the basic part of it, Passover is there to rectify the consequence of sin, which is death. So Passover, by benefiting from Passover, is what makes us immortal. And then from that, without that, the rest of it doesn't matter. If you benefit from matzah without benefiting from Passover, then, you know, you're no longer separated from God, but you're immortal. So you're no longer separated, but it ain't going to last long. So without it, you know, without Passover, matzah isn't all that valuable. And same thing with the current. Being adopted into Yah's family, if it's only for the 20 or 30 years you have left on earth, isn't all that valuable. So, yeah, they work together as a cohesive. It's all three of them together which make it really worthwhile. You know, being made eternal, being made perfect, and, you know, being allowed to be reunified with Yah, and being adopted into his family. That together is great. Any of them individually, not so great. So, you know, here we are being told, before we can do the first step in that process, which is Passover, you must be circumcised. So that's where circumcision comes in here. And, you know, I'm going to continue. And then at that time, after being circumcised, he may approach so that he may celebrate, actively engage in, and do this. Act upon, perform, and profit from this. And then he shall be, he shall come to exist, considered the same as a native-born member of the family, grafted and rooted into the land. But anyone who is if that goes back to what we were talking about before, the idea that, you know, this is only for Israel, and, yeah, we're grafted in, we're not native-born, we're not, you know, descendants of Abraham, so this doesn't apply to us. But it says, and then he shall be considered the same as a native-born when he is circumcised. And we have the music coming, so we're going to consider that some more when we return. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. When we left off, we were discussing the Exodus chapter 12, And we just read, I'll read it again. Speaking of, after someone has been circumcised who wants to partake in Passover, it says, and then he shall be considered the same as a native-born member of the family, Ezra, a person who springs from the natural tree with all rights of citizenship of the land. And so, you know, we were talking about the idea that people throw around that this is only for Israel. This is only for the descendants of Abraham, and that doesn't matter. But what Yah is saying here is that if you want to be a part of his family, if you want to benefit from Passover, be circumcised, then participate in Passover. And then you're considered the same as a native-born member of the family. You know, used the term before, grafted in. And, you know, once you're grafted in, you're part of the tree. You know, you're not something separate anymore. And so this goes back to, we're going to read the very next verse coming up, and it's great. It says that there's only one Torah. And this goes back to that. There isn't a Torah for Gentiles and a Torah for Israel. There isn't rules for one group and rules for another group. There's only one set of rules. You know, and because by partaking in the Passover, by choosing to participate in the covenant, we become the same. You know, in every aspect, pretty much, we are identical to members of those descended from Abraham. So we go on to read, though, but anyone who is uncircumcised, he shall not partake in it or be nourished by it. So, yeah, we just get told that if you do this, if you're circumcised and you desire to partake in Passover, which, as we'll learn when we do the show on Passover coming up, is something you really want to do.
You know.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'll let you finish. Sorry.
No, I was done.
Oh, were you finishing reading the verse, though?
We got a little bit more to go, but go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say it's interesting. Well, obviously, if you carry it over and thinking what Passover is representing, which I think it's hard for Christians to grasp that sometimes, but Passover and the fulfillment with the Messiah. And so saying that it's that important for you to be circumcised to even partake in Passover, you would think it would also be as important to be circumcised to partake in the fulfillment of Passover.
Well, exactly. You know, you can't benefit. You know, it's not saying just the annual Passover. No, it's saying the Passover. Yeah, to partake in and benefit from the Passover, you must be circumcised. And, you know, a lot of people will point to, that's just for Passover. How come is circumcision so important? How come it doesn't mention it with the other mikra? And, you know, it's like we just talked about, you know, the other mikra, you know, are really, without Passover, not really that much of a benefit. And so in order to benefit from them, you really have to benefit from Passover. Yeah, Passover is the first step. You know, we talk about there's a seven-step path to God, and Passover is the first step. It's the, you know, in Yahusha's parlance, it's the door.
And wouldn't circumcision be the first step?
Well, before, you know, first step is Passover, but before you can pass through the door of Passover, you have to be circumcised. So, yeah, that would technically be the first step. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is also why it's the fifth of the terms and conditions. Before you can benefit from Passover, you have to agree to, come to understand and agree to the five terms and conditions of the covenant. And the fifth is to be, as a male, be circumcised as a female and male to circumcise your son. Mm-hmm. So before you can, you know, start down the journey to God, you have to agree, you know, understand and agree to the terms and conditions. And then the one, you know, the one of them that is a physical thing is to be circumcised. And then you can enter the doorway of Passover, celebrate, and partake in the nourished by Passover, and therefore then be partake in Matzah, Bikurim, Seven Sabbaths, Trumpet, Yom Kippurim, and Shelters. So, but if you're uncircumcised, you cannot participate in it. And then we have, continuing in the verse, we have one of my favorite lines, because this just kind of, to me, puts everything right in. It makes it clear. Only one Torah, only one, Ichad, Torah, shall exist for the naturally born person, native members of the family, and for the visitor from different countries and cultures who live as a guest in your midst. That sums it up right there. We'll continue at the top of the hour. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. When we left off, we were just reading about how in Exodus 12, Yahweh tells us that anyone who is uncircumcised shall not partake in or be nourished by the Passover. Now, you know, if Passover's not something you're interested in, if you, I would say most Christians aren't, then fine. You know, you're not interested in Passover, you're not interested in alleviating yourself of death, all right, that's your call. Go on, be fine. But if you are, if, you know, partaking in and being nourished by Passover is something that interests you, something that's important to you, you have to be circumcised. And then we have Yahweh telling us there is only one Torah, and that it exists for both the naturally born and for the visitors from different countries and cultures. So the same Torah that applies to the Jews, to use the common vernacular of today, applies to the Gentiles. Again, not in that you have to follow it, but if you choose to engage in Yah's covenant, then this Torah applies to you. Now, again, it's important to note, Torah does not mean law. You know, you're going to see that in every English translation, but that is not what it means. Do some research. Examine it. Torah is teaching and instruction, guidance. It's, you know, guidance from our Father. And it's guidance, you know, mapped to his house.
You actually meant out on a really good metaphor, if you think about it, because, well, I guess as a Christian, I always heard my parents taught that the Word was God and the Word was with God at the very beginning. And so I still think that that's true. And the Word was the Torah, though. So if you think about it, the Messiah was the walking, living, breathing Torah. And so really for them to not like the Torah kind of equates to not really liking the Messiah, because that was, in essence, what he did was he kept everything perfectly, and it's like the Torah made flesh.
Exactly. Well, yeah, good example. You know, expounding upon that metaphor, you know, if the Torah is law and Yahusha, or, and use the Christian vernacular according to the, you know, Christian, Jesus, if Jesus is the Word and the Word is the Torah and the Torah is law, what would that make him? It'd make him a lawyer. It'd make him a judge. It would make him, you know, this legalistic guy. Now, when you read in the Greek text when it describes his life, does he seem like that to you?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
No.
Not at all.
The teaching and instruction, guidance, that fits perfectly. So this idea that Torah is law is just, you know, it's ridiculous in the context of how it's used. It's ridiculous in the, you know, breakdown of the Word. It's just, it has no, it is teaching and instruction. It's, like I said, it's a map. It's guidance. It's the map from here, this imperfect world, to Yah's world. And, you know, if you want to follow it, you follow it. You don't have to follow it. You know, there are millions of people on the planet who have no interest in following it, and quite frankly, God doesn't care. He's not up there going to shed a tear because they've chosen not to follow his path. He doesn't know them. They don't know him. He doesn't want to know them because they don't want to know him. Now, those that want to know him, he provided his Torah, his teaching, his instruction, his guidance. And if we follow that and we deserve that, we will end up with him. And those are the people he's interested in, are those that want to know him. Now, really, yeah, Yah has used the term before, you know, unrequited love. Unrequited love is the most draining and, you know, difficult thing in the world. And Yah's not going to subject himself to that. If you don't love him, he's not going to sit there and obsess on it. He's going to look to those who do love him and be with them. Makes sense.
This is only healthy.
Yeah, exactly. So we have the one Torah. And then we go on to read, and all of the children of Israel, the individuals who strive and contend with, who engage and persist with, who are set free and empowered by God, acted upon and did, celebrated, actively engaged and profited, as Yahweh had instructed, Moshe and Aaron. And then, and Moshe and Aaron likewise did the same. And then it happened, in this essential and substantive day, Yahweh came to bring out the children of Israel. So this was at the very beginning of the first fulfillment of Passover. So that, you know, we just went through, let's see, kind of, let me recap this whole section again real quick. And Yahweh spoke to God, spoke as God unto Moshe and Aharon. He said, the prescribed ordinances of Passover is not for every strange, estranged and foreign child to partake it. But every servant, every individual who chooses to be included and adopted and who is circumcised at that time, he may partake in it and be nourished by it. Temporary residents and hired workers are not to partake in it or be nourished by it. Inside one's home and with one's family, it will provide nourishment. You shall not go outside of the family and home, taking the flesh outside of the family. And you shall not break or sell its bone. The entire community and witness of Israel shall actively engage, celebrate, and profit from this with him. And indeed, when the guest or a guest who is living with you and the visitor who is from a different place or culture acts upon and actively engages in, thereby celebrating Passover, to approach Yahweh, every male must be circumcised for him to reach this goal and for him to approach and present himself. And then, at that time, he may approach so that he may celebrate, actively engage in, and do this. And then he shall be considered the same as a native-born member of the family, grafted and rooted in to the land. But anyone who is uncircumcised, he shall not partake in it or be nourished by it. Only one Torah shall exist for the naturally born person and for the visitors from different countries and cultures who live as guests in your midst. And all of the children of Israel acted upon and did as relationally Yahweh had instructed. Moshe and Aaron likewise did the same. And then it happened in this essential and substantive day. Yahweh came to bring out the children of Israel. Shemot, Exodus 12, verses 43-51. So that's pretty condemning. If you want to participate in Passover, you must be circumcised. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And, yeah, a lot of people will try and bring up, well, you can't keep Passover perfectly, so therefore it doesn't matter if I'm circumcised, I can still celebrate Passover. But the thing is, Yah didn't say, you know, if you don't get a perfect unblemished lamb, you can't participate in Passover. He didn't say that if you don't have unleavened bread, you can't participate in Passover. The only thing he said you have to have done in order to be able to not, you know, the only excluding factor was that you were not circumcised. That was the only thing he said would exclude you from benefiting from Passover.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting that at the beginning, anyone who chooses to be included and adopted. So free will is protected, but then with that free will and that choice, we do have a responsibility to follow through with what God is asking of us. Is almost, I think you said it before, like our signature on the covenant or something.
Yeah, the circumcision is, you know, circumcising our child is our signature on the covenant. It's our, you know, he calls it the sign. You know, the sign of the covenant. And it's our agreement to raise our child in the covenant. It's our agreement to try and live our lives in the covenant. And, you know, that's exactly right. And, you know, I should correct myself. There are really two requirements to participate in and benefit from Passover. One is that you want to. If you don't want to, you don't have to. You know, like I said, God's God of free will. You don't want to participate in the covenant? Fine. You don't want to participate in Passover? Fine. But if you want to, there's one other requirement. You must be circumcised. You know, it's not too much to ask. And, you know, one of the things we're going to talk about a little later on the show, and we'll get into that, is, you know, it is a benefit. You know, being circumcised is not a negative factor. There are a lot of health benefits associated with circumcision. So, like I said, we'll get into that a little later, hopefully. So, yeah, there are two requirements to participating in Passover. Desire, and then being circumcised.
Now, what is the significance of waiting until the eighth day? Because in most hospitals, I think they normally just, after you have a male child, unless you specify otherwise, they normally just circumcise them right there because it is healthier for all of the health benefits. So for someone who didn't wait on the eighth day, is there any special significance in that?
Well, the reason for the eighth day is there's two different reasons, really. There's the physical reason. Yeah, I tell people there's most everything Yah said, there's a physical and a spiritual aspect. And with this, it's the same way. The physical aspect, why wait till the eighth day? Actually, it's kind of funny. Our brother-in-law is at med school right now, and I sent him a copy of this. He sent me some information on it. And this is one of the things, let me read it for you, that he me the other day talking about this. He says, the protein needed for the coagulation of blood, isn't enough of it available until after the seventh day. let me see if I can read this. I'm going to try and pronounce some of these words. Colonic bacteria synthesis is a significant portion of humans' vitamin K needs. Newborns often receive a vitamin K shot at birth to tide them over until the colons become colonized after a 5 to 7 day age consumption of their mother's milk. So they don't, this vitamin K is in their blood won't coagulate. Nowadays, you know, in ancient times, they didn't have that. You know, you couldn't just give a kid a vitamin K shot and, okay, no problem, they're going to coagulate. Now they do. They'll give the kids a vitamin K shot and then they'll circumcise them right there and it's not a problem. But if Moshe had, you know, or Abram had circumcised his son on the first day of his life, that kid probably would have bled to death.
You know, his son more is obviously back then, Yah knew all of that stuff, even though we didn't. He knew that we didn't know that, so it's more for health reasons than anything else.
Exactly. Yeah, like I said.
Well,
you know,
I know. But also, is it Tabernacles is one of the only festivals that is 8 days long?
Exactly. Now you're getting into, like I said, the physical and the spiritual aspect. And the spiritual aspect is what eight represents. Eight, you know, in Hebrew, or in Scripture, numbers come up a lot. And, you know, probably the most, you know, God's favorite number is seven, which is a combination of six plus one, man and God. And eight is what comes right after seven. So what comes after perfection, and that's eternity. Mm-hmm. Eight is representative of eternity, infinite. Yeah, even if you look today, the mathematical symbol for infinity is just an eight on its side. So, yeah, it represents eternity. And we'll get into the whole aspect of tabernacles when we come back. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Before we left for the commercial break, we were discussing the significance of having circumcision be performed on the eighth day. We talked about the physical aspect, which is that a child prior to that could not coagulate the blood and would bleed to death, likely. And, yeah, we talked about how nowadays the shot can be given that allows that to happen, and they'll often circumcise the kid on the first day. But we were also discussing the significance spiritually of the eighth day and how eight in Scripture represents infinity or eternity. And you brought up the fact that there is one of the festivals which is 8 days long. You know, we have Passover is 1 day, then Unleavened Bread is 7 days, Purim is 1 day, Seventh Sabbath is 1 day, Trumpets is 1 day, Yom Kippur is 1 day, and then we reach the destination, which is Sukkah, shelters. And shelters is interesting because the presentation of it breaks it down in terms of a 7 day. Then it says there's an extra day or an extra festival, a chog, on the eighth day. So it breaks it down into seven, and it's a 7 day festival. But then it says on the eighth day there is a festival feast as well. That is the continuation of it. And eight, like I said, represents eternity. And eight would be representing we have the seven steps of these festivals, with the last one being the destination, and that one lasts for eternity. You know, Sukkah, when it is fulfilled, will not be a one-time fulfillment. It is going to last for all of eternity. And another interesting part of that, though, comes back to what we call, you know, Christians interpret, you know, took this pagan holiday of Christmas and adopted it, and they call it the birth of Jesus. And we know for a fact he was not born on December 25th, and we can actually tell you exactly when he was born, because he told us, you know, to quote in English translation, John, you know, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh, and the flesh tabernacled with us. And that is exactly what happened. He was born on the festival of tabernacles. And, you know, that was just Sukkah. Sukkah is the Hebrew word, tabernacles is the English word. And so if he was born on the first day of tabernacles, when would he have been circumcised?
On the eighth day.
Which would have been the last day of tabernacles.
Yeah.
So, I don't, you know, if I know Yah, that's not a coincidence. And so that's why the eighth day is important. You know, Yah could have said on the ninth day, on the tenth day, on the 12th day. Yeah, you know, any day after eight would have worked. But he said the eighth day because of that correlation with eternity and infinity. You know, by choosing to circumcise our kid, we are putting them on the first step to eternity with Yah. So, And in keeping with that, you know, moving into the rest of our verses, the next time we come across circumcision is in Kara, or Leviticus 12, verse 2. And we're not going to get into it, but it's just a repetition of what we already read, where he instructs us to circumcise on the eighth day. And again, it's circumcised of the flesh. Because one of the other arguments that you'll hear a lot is that circumcision of the flesh is not what's important. It's circumcision of the heart, which just doesn't hold up when you look at all these times where Yah specifies. Now, of all the ones we've had now, have you seen one that said it's circumcised of the heart?
No, not in any of those that we just read.
Now, have pretty much every one of the ones we read with Yah had circumcision of the flesh?
Mm-hmm.
And even more specifically, circumcision of the flesh of the foreskin. So, yeah, this circumcision of the heart is what matters. It's part of this whole Pauline idea of over-spiritualizing everything, where everything's got this super spiritual meaning, and that's all that matters. And, you know, like I said, everything Yahweh says, at least everything I've come across, there may be something that isn't, but there's always a physical and a spiritual aspect to it. And
right.
Circumcision is the same. Yeah, there is we will read it. You know, it talks about circumcision of the heart, and that is important because we are told that we need to be circumcised of the heart. But that isn't something we can do. Yeah, I can't circumcise my child's heart. I can't circumcise my own heart. Y'all can. And Yah will. And he tells us how to do that. So, but what we're talking about here is the circumcision of the flesh. So, and a lot of Leviticus is reiterating stuff that was already mentioned in Genesis and Exodus, but it's more codified. It's more listed out in that way there. So that's kind of what Leviticus does. And when we return, we'll pick up in Kara, Leviticus 19, and we'll go to verse 23. Welcome back to Shattering Myths Radio. When we left off, we've been discussing the topic of circumcision, which is our topic for the day. And if you listened at the first hour, I mentioned that Yada and I did a show on this about 3 years ago, and what we did was we looked up every time the word mul, which is the word for circumcision in Hebrew, was used. And I pointed out that to our shame, we didn't think to look up every time the word arel, or uncircumcised, was used. And I did that this time, and I found a few things that, you know, like I said, I feel like an idiot that I missed this to begin with, because it's really interesting when you start looking at some of the times Yah uses the word for uncircumcised and how he uses it. Because it isn't always speaking just of being uncircumcised of the flesh. It's not just to say that this child was uncircumcised or anyone who is uncircumcised. It's often used as a metaphor. I guess that metaphor would be what you would call it. I'm not an English grammar person, so correct me if I'm wrong. But this is what we're going to pick up in Kara Leviticus, chapter 19, verse 23. And we're going to look at an example of this, because this is really interesting. I'm just going to read from an English translation. I didn't have a chance to amplify these myself. I have looked up the most pertinent words, but it's just a very basic English translation of it, not fully amplified. But it says, "And when you come into and enter the land and plant all of the food trees, count or consider as unharvestable unacceptable for harvest, literally regard as uncircumcised foreskin, its fruit for 3 years. It exists to you as uncircumcised, forbidden, not to be eaten." So Yah here is equating fruit that is unharvestable, something that's not to be picked or eaten yet, as being uncircumcised. Now, can you tell me why do you think I found this verse so interesting and so important?
Because of the uncircumcision having to do with the fruit, so it's not really talking about, well, because it's not ripe, it's not ready.
Well, that is true, but is there a harvest you can think of that's important to Yah?
Oh, well, yes.
There's the true harvest, what is errantly known as the rapture. You know, in the Greek, you know, it's a harvest. It's a harpazo. And, you know, if you are considered unharvestable or literally uncircumcised. You know, is that the position you want to be in when Yah comes to harvest his family?
You?
Exactly. So that's why I found this interesting. You know, Yah equating uncircumcised foreskin to being unharvestable. You know, calling something that is unharvestable uncircumcised. Now, he could have used unharvestable. There's our word for harvest in Hebrew, and then you can negate it using lo. So he could, you know, easily have said, it's unharvestable. But he chose, you know, Yah's a wordsmith, and Yah, you know, he's the greatest communicator in the world. I don't think he did it just to be flippant. And, you know, he chose to use the word arel, uncircumcised, to equate with being unharvestable. So, yeah, I don't tend to think God does a lot of things by accident. I think he has a reason for everything he does. And there is a reason he used that there. And keep in mind, this isn't, you know, a lot of people will try and say, well, that's, you know, this is what I found when I looked this up in different lexicons, and namely, one of my favorites to use is the Theological Word Book of the Old Testament. And, you know, there's basically two ways people translate this and people look at this. And one is that it's was an Israeli colloquialism. You know, it was just a phrase that they used to communicate this. But, you know, was this an Israeli speaking this? Was this a Jew speaking this? Or was this Yahweh speaking? Now, this is written in Yahweh's voice, is it not?
Yeah, that's how I took it.
So, you know, would Yah use a Jewish colloquialism in his message to the world? You know, because he's done told us the Torah is for everyone, not just for Jews. So, why, you know, he would not use something that would, you know, confuse others. Unless you think, you know, which I think the Christian mindset is that God messes with us. Now, unless you think God is messing with us, there's a reason he chose his word. And we should be mindful of that. And so if you are uncircumcised, you are unharvestable. And, you know, he said, and I looked up this to see how English translations dealt with it. I guess there's two schools of thought on it, and that's, you know, one is that it is related to, you know, just a colloquialism, and the other is that it means what it means. And so, yeah, just interesting to read it in those terms.
Yeah.
Like I said, when you consider the harvest of saved souls and whether or not you want to be a part of that, it's interesting for me. I'll let people draw the conclusion they choose. We'll move on now to Kara, Leviticus 26:41, and Yah is speaking of those who have walked contrary to him being or humbling their uncircumcised heart and returning to his Torah. So, again, while not speaking of in a physical sense, he is using it. Would you say this was a positive or a negative use of the word?
A positive or negative? Well, negative.
Mm-hmm. So this is akin to Moshe calling, saying his lips are he has uncircumcised lips. It's a very negative connotation. Well, this time, instead of Moshe using it to describe himself, Yah is using it to describe those who have left his Torah. So, again, Yah using uncircumcised, RL, in a very negative way. Then we come to, that's all of the verses in Kara, which deal with it. We would come to Dabarim, which is Deuteronomy, apparently translated into English. And we'll start
What does circumcised mean again?
Circumcised?
I mean, not in the actual act, but like in the context of an uncircumcised heart. So what is the definition of circumcised?
Let me find that. I got it down here. 1 second. And then, lost that, please. Arel, the stubborn, unrepentant, unhearing, and unresponsive.
Oh, okay.
So it would be saying...
I remember reading that. I'm sorry, I couldn't find it.
Yeah, so this, like I said, you can look at that. The fact that the word for uncircumcised carries all of those negative connotations. There isn't a positive connotation amongst that.
No, well, and it's very fitting for people who kind of bolt at the idea of circumcision are very stubborn and unchanging and willing to do it.
Exactly. I mean, you look at it, you know, most of the time I come across this as people who are following Paul. And, you know, that's
right.
You know, that's where this subject is so important is, yeah, a little aside, I want to kind of share something is, you know, the way I came to be friends with and know Yada is, you know, I read his works, I found them online, I read them, I listened to them on the radio, but when he was doing his series on Questioning Paul, which was during the writing of Questioning Paul, he had asked for people to help edit it. And myself and a few others volunteered. And, yeah, at first, there's something a lot of people don't realize is when he first started writing Questioning Paul, it was a defense of Paul. It was being written to show how Paul was being misinterpreted, being twisted, and, you know, that what Paul really meant was this, and it was in line with Torah. You know, it was a defense of Paul. You know, Yada actually said that he really related to Paul. He saw a lot of himself in Paul in those terms. And, yeah, the whole redemptive story, that he was real religious and left that and found God. And, you know, that part of it Yada related to. But it was as he went through that he realized that, you know, it was indefensible. And, like I said, I was one of the people that volunteered to help him edit it. And because of that, any challenge I had got put in there. He'd send me the chapter. I'd read through it. I'd note in the side, yeah, challenge, point out inconsistencies, anything I could find. Now I would say I play devil's advocate, but at the time I really, you know, these were challenges, these were things that, you know, I had. Because when he first started saying that Paul was a false apostle, I was, you know, no way, that can't be right. Yeah, you gotta be missing something. And I was sitting there writing there and defending Paul. And while he answered I'd send it to him with all these comments and, you know, challenges, and then I'd get a copy back a week and a half, 2 weeks later, and he'd have addressed every single one of them. And even then, I still wasn't entirely convinced. And what actually convinced me was, as I said earlier, you know, my side project, my pet project has been to try and do an amplified translation of the Torah, starting in Genesis. And as luck would have it, coincidence would have it, whatever, I happen to be translating the Genesis 17 verses we discussed earlier at the exact same time that Yada was. And you know, that was what convinced me, was when I read what Yahweh wrote in Bereshit 17, I was undeniable. There's no denying Yah's position on circumcision. And then I got the chapter from Yada, which was where Paul attacks circumcision. And I'm like, well, there's no way around this now. You know, everything else I could be like, well, Paul meant was this. And, you know, if you look at it like this, what he's trying to say is, and I could do that with everything until I got to the circumcision part. And when Paul attacked circumcision, I'm like, well, wait. Yeah, what Paul said is clear as day. You cannot come up with, well, what Paul means is this. I mean, Paul said that if you are circumcised, the Messiah profits you nothing. He said that if you are circumcised, you are indebted to complete and fulfill every aspect of the Torah. And there is no getting around his view on circumcision. Yeah, the whole Jerusalem summit was all about his view on circumcision and saying that the, you know, Gentiles who wanted to be part of it didn't need to be circumcised. And everyone, you know, the apostle going, wait a minute, we need to talk. So there is no, you know, this is one thing where, you know, there's two things that I found that you cannot twist Paul's a bit torn. And circumcision is one of them. And I, you know, I came across that at the same time that I got that chapter, and I was just like, okay, I gotta let go. Paul's wrong. And yeah, that was, you know, from that point on, I was like, okay, there's no more defending this guy. He answered everything else I'd had as well, so that was why I dismissed Paul. And that's why the circumcision topic is something that I find so important. And because it's we'll talk about it more when we get back. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. When we left, I was talking about why this topic of circumcision is so important to me and why I chose to do this and dedicate this. And that's because that was what caused me to finally acknowledge that I could no longer defend Paul. And I was hearing, I actually lost several friends on this topic because they refused to, acknowledge Paul was wrong. And to me, what they did mostly was what I did, which was twist what Paul said and make it fit the Torah, which I'm like, okay, you can do that. But then when we'd come up to the topic of conversation turned to circumcision, they would start twisting the Torah to fit Paul. And it just became to where that was coming up all the time. And we just kind of stopped talking because of it. And I haven't talked to them in several years now. And it's because, you know, they sided with Paul on this. And for me, I couldn't, you know, every time it would come up, we'd end up talking about it because of that. And, you know, when you start twisting the Torah to fit Paul, that's where I have an issue. You know, you can twist Paul all day long. And if you want to make Paul fit Torah, go for it. To me, it's just too much mental gymnastics. But if you're going to twist what God said to make it fit what Paul said, that, you know, we can't move beyond that. So that's why this topic of circumcision is so important to me. And that's why I think it's important to love it. You know, I said there are two aspects of Paul's message that are completely incongruous with the Torah, with incongruous with Yah's message. And that is two things that you have to either dismiss Paul or twist what God said to fit Paul to, you know, avoid. And that is circumcision and his two covenants. You know, when you read Yah's word, it's clear there is one covenant. There is only one covenant. There will only ever be one covenant. And when he starts speaking of two covenants, there's no defending that. So those are the two. Go ahead.
I was just agreeing with you. Sorry.
Sorry. All right. So moving on, we're in Devarim, Deuteronomy 10, verse 16. We are instructed. Wait, did I skip one here? No, yeah. So we're instructed by Yah to circumcise the foreskin of our heart and to harden our necks no more. And I'll read this in an English translation. Give you a couple
harden words. Our necks no more?
Yeah. So to give you a little context, I'll read it from the this isn't a translation. I'm not endorsing this, so please don't think I'm endorsing this. But the English translation I use as a go-to just because it doesn't have, you know, the Lord everywhere. It's the IRS, International Scripture Research Institute, Scripture version. And you start with the 15 verse. Yahweh delighted only in your fathers to love them, and he chose their seed after them, you above all people, as it is today. And you shall circumcise the foreskin of your heart and harden your necks no more. For Yahweh, your Elohim, is Elohim of mighty ones, master of masters, and the great God, mighty and awesome, who shows no partiality nor takes a bribe. So, you know, here, because it's not speaking of a physical circumcision, it's speaking of circumcision of your heart, and equates that with being accepting of Yah. So if you want to be accepting of Yah, you will circumcise your heart. Again, circumcision that we used in a positive way, while every instance of uncircumcised we've seen has been in the negative way. Going on again about the circumcision of our hearts, and Devarim 30, verse 6, we see Yahweh speaking of restoring the relationship, and he says he will circumcise our hearts. So, again, circumcision being used in a positive way. And, you know, this time it's Yah saying, not telling us to circumcise our hearts, but saying he will do it. So, again, circumcision positive. The next time we see it is outside of the Torah or inside the Torah, depending on how you view it, because there could be an argument made that Joshua or Yahusha was writing Torah. We're not going to get into that here. But in Yahusha 5, verses 1 through 10, it explains that prior to entering the promised land, Yah had Yahshua circumcise everyone. Yeah, it explains that all those who came out of Egypt had been circumcised, but those that were born on the way were not. So Joshua circumcises them all, and then they camp out and enjoy the Passover before they enter the promised land. So, you know, the promised land, Israel throughout Scripture, is a metaphor for, you know, Yah's home in heaven. So before they were able to enter it, they had to be circumcised. And we'll continue. We'll pick up and leave Isaiah when we return. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We just finished going through all of the Torah references to circumcision, including the one in Joshua, where we learned that before the Israelites were allowed to enter the promised land, they camped out, they were all circumcised, then celebrated a Passover, which is fitting, considering they were passing over a river at the time. So we're going to move on into the prophets. And speaking prophetically of the redemption and deliverance of Jerusalem, Isaiah declares in chapter 52, verse 1, "Awake, awake, put on your strength, O Zion, put on your garments of splendor, O Jerusalem, the set-apart city, for no more do the uncircumcised and the unclean come into you." So, again, not speaking, to this, I'm speaking very much of physical circumcision, because these were driving out the invaders, or not driving out, but, this is prophetic, so, Jerusalem being delivered, saying that there will be no uncircumcised people there. And it also equates being uncircumcised with being unclean. So, again, a negative use of uncircumcised, and again, this is in Yahweh's words. This isn't Isaiah speaking. It is Isaiah speaking, but on behalf of Yahweh. Unlike the Barai Pauls that you read throughout his writings, Isaiah is always saying Yahweh says, and this is something Yahweh had said and declared. So, again, speaking of Zion, which is Israel, in Jerusalem, the set-apart city, it says, no more do the uncircumcised and the unclean come into you. Like I said, this is prophetic of the redemption and deliverance of Jerusalem. So that would be after the Armageddon war and everything else and Yah's return. So there will be no uncircumcised then. Moving on, in Jeremiah 4, we read, and again, I'm going to read from the Scriptures translation. Just because I haven't had time to amplify all these myself, I have looked at the most pertinent words to make sure they're not translated wrong. I've kind of done a once-over check on it, but I haven't actually translated it myself, so I'm just going to use theirs. And like I said, I do not recommend this one. It's just the best of a horrible lot. So we read, starting with Jeremiah chapter 4, we're going to read verses 1 through 4. If you do return, O Israel, declares Yahweh, return to me. And if you remove your abomination from my presence and cease straying, and shall swear, as Yahweh lives in truth, in right ruling and in righteousness, the nations shall bless themselves in him, and they shall boast in him. For this is what Yahweh said to the men of Yehuda and to Jerusalem. Break up your tillable ground and do not sow among thorns. Circumcise yourself unto Yahweh, and take away the foreskins of your heart, ye men of Yehuda and inhabitants of Jerusalem, lest my wrath come forth like fire and burn, with none to quench it, because of the evil of your deeds. So again, Yahweh is equating circumcision of the heart to returning to him, restoring your relationship, abandoning your evil ways, and returning to him. Again, circumcision, this realm of the heart, which we've, like I said, there is an argument to be made that we do need to be circumcised of the heart. It comes up a lot. It is important, but it is not as important as circumcision of the flesh, according to Yah. Because circumcision of the heart, Yah says he will do it for us. We can also do it by turning away from, politics, religion. So when we, leave man's ways and follow Yah, we are circumcising our heart. It's used to reference that. So then we read again, if you go to the sixth chapter of Jeremiah, and we'll start at verse 10, it reads, see, the ear is uncircumcised, and they are unable to listen. See, the word of Yahweh is a reproach to them. They do not delight in it. And, so literally, the ear is stubborn, unrepentant, unhearing, and unresponsive. A very negative connotation is saying they don't see the word of Yahweh. They don't listen to Yah's word. It's actually a reproach to them. He calls their, this is the same as when Moshe referred to his lips as being uncircumcised. It's not that they're literally not cut, but that it's just this negative connotation. And again, this isn't like it was with Moshe. Moshe saying it. This is Yahweh saying it. And, find this whole second part. The word of Yahweh is a reproach to them. They do not delight in it. This just reminds me of any time you debate a religious person and you try and cite Yahweh's word for them. They hate it. They don't delight in it. They don't, want to hear it. They're stubborn. They're unrepentant. They're unhearing and they're unresponsive. I know you've had an incident like this fairly recently with people, you care about, and you tried to bring up Yah's word, and they got upset at you for bringing out a copy of the Torah to read to them. They didn't delight in Yah's word. It was a reproach to them. It would be fair to say that their ear is uncircumcised in Yah's parlance.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, it's being used by Yahweh in a very negative and, dare I say, derogatory sense. So being uncircumcised isn't just something, you know, a lot of the things you'll read, they try and explain this in terms of, you know, being uncircumcised was viewed by the Jews as the, you know, lesser thing, and it, you know, the Jews had this belief about it and this connotation, so it was a derogatory term for them. Which it was, you know, that's all 100% true. It was used as a derogatory term by Jews for others throughout history. But, like I said, you know, this isn't a Jew saying it. Well, I mean, I guess you could say it is, Yahweh. But, you know, this is God saying it. This is his view, not just the Jewish people. This isn't a Jewish cultural view. This is Yahweh's view. So, that's Jeremiah 6:10. Moving on, you have Jeremiah 9, where Yah says he will punish the circumcised and uncircumcised alike because they have forsaken his Torah. And this is important because, you know, while it is impossible to participate in Yah's family without being circumcised, just because you're circumcised don't mean you're part of his family. You know, if you forsake his Torah, you can be, there are plenty of people who are circumcised and don't know Yah. You know, for example, I was, my family circumcised me. My family was not part of the covenant. My family was not really religious at all. You know, as I tell people, my father's family was Catholic, my mother's was Lutheran. If religion was important to either one of them, I wouldn't be there, because Catholics and Lutherans don't tend to get along. So, I was not raised in a religious home, but my parents did circumcise me. That don't mean I was part of Yah's family from that point on. I was not saved by circumcision. What this is saying is, while circumcision can preclude you from being part of the family, it does not guarantee admission. You don't just get a snip and then you're done. You have, you cannot forsake his form. You have to embrace his form. If you want to be a part of Yah's family, you have to embrace the covenant. You have to be part of the covenant. You have to embrace his Torah, walk his path, and, part of that is being circumcised. So, while circumcision is not it is not salvation, it does not save you, it can preclude you from salvation. And that's, I get from this verse, He's going to punish the circumcised and uncircumcised alike because they forsake his Torah. And his Torah is his covenant. All that. So, it's not going to save you, but it is necessary. Then go to Ezekiel. In chapter 28, verse 10, Yahweh tells the prince of Zoar that he will suffer the death of the uncircumcised. Now, this is an interesting one because I had a little fun with this, because I read this and I'm like, wow. And if you're reading the English translation, it says the death of the uncircumcised. But the fact is, death, moot here, was in the plural form, which means death, plural. And, there's kind of two schools of thought I found when I looked this up as to what this phrase means. And, I'll let you be the judge of what you think it means. But one school of thought says that it means an ignoble death, a dishonorable death, a horrible death. That is just, it was just a phrase being used to convey a really bad death. And the other school of thought is that it means a physical and eternal death. And if you read, there's a little book called The Talmud, and I don't recommend them in terms of being really worth anything, other than what I was going to say is, if you read in there, their interpretation is the latter, that this means two deaths, a physical and eternal death. And the only reason I bring it up is because of the dating. And the Targums date to the early first, there are some even found among the Dead Sea Scrolls, so like the first, second centuries BCE. And so like I said, well, I don't think their interpretations tend to mean, Jack, in my opinion. It's basically the interpretations of a bunch of rabbis. It's Aramaic translations of the Torah, Prophets, Psalms, with commentary added in. But my point is that this was the older version. This is how people of that time period tended to view this verse. The later, I didn't find anything other than late 18th century and on that had that interpretation, the ignoble death interpretation. So, you know, the one existed long before the other. And, like I said, you have two to choose from, but the fact that moot is in the plural, to me, supports the latter interpretation. Yeah, you know, like I said, it's the death of the uncircumcised, meaning they would have, he will suffer a physical death, and then an eternal death. You know, and this goes back to the whole concept of souls being mortal and dying. God told us that, you know, death and destruction is a wide path. And so his soul, this prince of Zor, will suffer both deaths. He will die physically, and then he will die eternally. His soul will die. Now, like I said, the ignoble death, to me, doesn't make sense. Why would God use the term moot at all? Why would he use deaths of the uncircumcised if he was trying to say just a horrible death? Now, he has a way for that as well. He could have said he will die a bad death. He will die a wicked death, a cruel death. Yeah, he could have described it in any of those ways, but he chose to use the term death, plural, of the uncircumcised. So, like I said, I'm going to leave it up to you to determine what you think it means. And Patty, you can tell me what you think it means after the break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We left off, we were discussing Ezekiel 28, verse 10, and Yahweh telling Prince Azor that he will suffer the death of the uncircumcised. We were talking about how there are two ways of viewing this. One is that this just means a horrible or ignoble death, and the other that it means a physical and then eternal death. I was pointing out that the plural form of moot would support the latter, and that the latter is also the older interpretation. So if you read that, you know, in terms of this is a bad guy, yeah, that's the context. They were given a little bit of, you know, what this guy's done, and then we were told that he will suffer the death of the uncircumcised. How would you interpret that?
I'll just say that he was going to just cease to exist.
Exactly. The two deaths. Physical death, his body will die, and then his soul will die. That, like I said, that's how I interpret it. You know, someone asked me to find another interpretation, but the ignoble death just doesn't make sense to me because we are dealing with Yahweh, who is, in my opinion, the greatest communicator who ever lived. And if that was what he wanted to convey, he could have conveyed it. But I'll also point out, even if that weren't the case, the fact that he used the term, again, uncircumcised in a derogatory way would be, still not a triumph for those who argue that circumcision is unimportant. Yeah, this is one of those ones that I was talking about, I missed a lot the first time I went there into this study because I didn't look up RL. So this one was there, and I came across this, and it was just like, wow. Y'all just told us that, those who are uncircumcised are dead spiritually. And that's the only way I can see to interpret that. So, we'll move on. Like I said, we're going to try and beat as many nails into this coffin as we can. And Ezekiel 32, verse 18, we read, Son of man, mourn and lament upon the multitude of Mitzrayim, Egypt. She causes you to send her down. Her and her daughters of the mighty nations unto the below Hati Eret, of the lowest part, the region below the surface of the earth, the realm of the grave and death, descending, Yared, being lowered and brought down to the pit, bore, hole, or depression in the ground, a prison or a dungeon, a pit in the ground for prisoners, death, the figurative extension of a pit as a place of corruption. How are you more pleasant than others? Descend, be lowered and brought down, and lie down with the uncircumcised. Does that sound very good to you?
No.
Let's see if that was out of the amplification. Let's make it a little clearer, a little easier. I know the amplification can get them away sometimes and make it a little hard, especially on the air. When reading it, it's a lot easier, but when talking, it's a little harder. So, doing it without the amplification. Son of man. Mourn and lament upon the multitude of Egypt. She causes you to send her down, her and the daughters of the mighty nation, unto the below region, descending to the pit. How are you more pleasant than others? Descend and lie down with the uncircumcised. So that's pretty derogatory. He is equating the place of the uncircumcised, lying down with the uncircumcised, with pit. With descending to the below region. And, by way of background, Mitzrayim was not a very good nation at this point. Egypt, Mitraim. Mitraim is the Hebrew word for Egypt. It means the crucible. You know, they've never exactly been a good nation throughout their history, but, you know, this kind of time of war and, you know, all that. So this was not, you know, these were not good people. They were being descended into this pit in the low region, which Yah equates to the place of the uncircumcised. And, you know, actually, if you read and go to Ezekiel 32, you'll find 9 more examples where uncircumcised is used in this chapter. 9 times. Well, 10 if you count this one, in one chapter. And it lists a group of people, all bad nations, you know, all nations that God is none too happy with, and it equates all of them to going to the pit, to going to Sheol, and to going to the, literally the place of the going to the place of the uncircumcised. 10 times in this one chapter. Every single one of them is derogatory. Now, this doesn't... if you were to read the 32nd chapter of Ezekiel, you would not come away with the place of the uncircumcised as a place you want to be. You know, it equates it to the pit, it equates it to Sheol, you know, all these very bad things. Now, does that sound like a place you want to go?
No.
Me neither. So, yeah, like I said, 10 times, you know, go read through, and you'll find that the same words are used in most English translations that I examine. Oh, welcome back to Shattering Myths. When we left off, we were examining Ezekiel chapter 32, and we had just read verses 18 and 19, but, you know, I was going to kind of skip over this and have people go read it, but I think it's bad enough and it's important enough, I'm going to go ahead and read through some of this, again, using the Scriptures translation. So starting in the 20th verse, we read, "In the midst of those slain by the sword, they fell. She shall be given to the sword, drawing her and all her crowd. The mightiest among the mighty speak to him out of the midst of the grave with those who help him. They have gone down, they lie with the uncircumcised, slain by the sword. Bashura is there in all her assembly, with the graves all around her, all of them slain, fallen by the sword. Whose graves are set in the side of the pit, and her assembly is all around her grave, all of them slain, fallen by the sword, because they instill fear in the land of the living. There is Eliam in all her crowd, around her grave, all of them slain, fallen by the sword. They have gone down uncircumcised to the lower part of the earth, because they instill fear in the land of the living, and they bear the shame of those going down to the pit. They have set her bed in the midst of the slain with all her crowd and her with her graves all around it, all of them uncircumcised, slain by the sword for the fear they instilled in the land of the living. So they bear their shame with going down to the pit. In the midst of the slain they have been placed. There are Meshech and Tubal with all her crowd with all their graves around it, all of them uncircumcised, slain by the sword because they instilled fear in the land of the living. And they shall not lie with the mighty who are fallen of the uncircumcised, who have gone down to the grave with the battle gear, and those whose sword were laid under her head, under their head, but their crookedness are on the bones because of their fear of the mighty in the land of the living. And you shall be broken in the midst of the uncircumcised and lie with those slain with the sword." And it goes on. We'll keep reading. So we got a lot to read, so we'll go through it. "And they shall not lie with the mighty who are fallen of the uncircumcised." 28. "And you shall be broken in the midst of the uncircumcised and lie with those slain by the sword. There is Edom, her sovereigns, all her princes, who shall be given up in their might, those who slain by the sword. With the uncircumcised they lie, and with those going down to the pit. There are princes of the north, all of them, and all of Sidonia, who have gone down with the slain because of the fear they instilled. They are ashamed of their might. They lie uncircumcised with those slain by the sword, and bear the shame with those going down to the pit. Pharaoh and all his army shall see them, and he shall be confronted for all of his hosts that were slain by the sword, declares Yahweh. For I have put a fear in him in the land of the living, yet he shall be placed in the midst of the uncircumcised with those slain by the sword. Pharaoh and all his hosts, declares Yahweh." So, yeah, we just went through all this. Now, they're not saying that these people are going there because they want circumcised, but he calls it the place of the uncircumcised. Yeah, so not that they're there because they're uncircumcised. He lists why they're there, but he does call it the place of the uncircumcised, which, how would you interpret that, Patty?
Place of the uncircumcised.
Yeah, if he equates it to the pit and to Sheol and the grave. Could you read that and come to the conclusion that if you're not circumcised, y'all don't care?
Well, obviously not.
Exactly. All right, moving on, we come to, and I believe this is going to be our last example of circumcision being mentioned in the prophet. And that's Ezekiel chapter 44. We read, "And Yahweh said to me, Son of man, place on your heart, see with your eyes, and listen with your ears to all which I am saying to you concerning all of the statutes of the house of Yehuda and concerning his entire Torah. Place it in your heart. On the path and entrance to the household, and with regard to you setting forth from the temple, and you shall say to the rebellious one, to the house of Yisrael, that is what my foundation, the upright pillar, Yahweh says. Your greatest, most detestable abomination of all, in all of the house of Yisrael, is including sons of foreigners, uncircumcised of heart, and uncircumcised of flesh, to exist in my temple, to defile and profane it, and him. Alongside my home, in your coming near and approaching my bread, my finest and choicest oil and wine, and my blood, you broke my family-oriented covenant relationship by all your detestable abominations and not closely and personally observing the required functions of my set-apart and purifying one. And you were appointed to personally and carefully observe this required function concerning my temple on your behalf. Thus says my foundation, the upright pillar, Yahweh. Every foreigner, son, who is uncircumcised in heart and in the flesh shall not be included inside my temple." That's Ezekiel chapter 44, verses 5 through 9. Now, this one's an important reading because, one, we have God both of circumcision of heart and flesh. So that answers the challenge that, you know, oh, circumcision of the heart, what matters, flesh doesn't matter. Now, here he's saying it's both. Now, the challenge I hear most on this verse is that, well, what God's condemning them for is the Levites or the Lowies shucking their job and, you know, passing it on to foreigners. Which is true, right? In the context of the historical aspects of Ezekiel's time, that was what happened. They had kind of shirked their job and had brought in these foreigners to do it for them. And that is part of what Yahweh is condemning them for, is not doing the job they said, you know, the job that they were assigned. But where this gets really interesting is the last verse. You know, every foreign son who is uncircumcised in heart and in the flesh shall not be included inside my temple. Now, people will say, okay, well, I'm not a Lowy. I don't need to be in there doing all that stuff anyways, and that's not all that important. But when you go look at what ties this together and makes this seem really important, or not seem, but makes this really important, is if you go to Revelation, and the third chapter, verse 12, you read, "All who are victorious will become pillars in the tabernacle of my God, in the temple of my God, and will never leave it, and I will write on them my name." So how are you going to be a temple or a pillar in the temple, in the tabernacle of God, if you're not allowed in there? I see you don't have an answer for that. Neither do I. If you can't enter the temple because you're not circumcised, it's kind of hard to be a pillar in it. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
So that's why that one, like I said, yeah, that one's important for the two reasons. It points out that circumcision of flesh and heart are important. And then, if you're not in the temple, you can't be a pillar of the temple. And God said all those who are victorious will become pillars in the tabernacle. So kind of sums it up right there. And that's all of the mentions we have of circumcision or uncircumcision and the Torah and prophets. Now, I left out anything related to Judges and Chronicles, where Ovel does come up a few times, because the nature of those texts is they're not Yahweh speaking, although he does speak in them occasionally. But you know, it's just a different nature than the prophet and the Torah, which is God speaking. But I checked in several of the verses in there, if not every one, I'm not sure now. It's been a couple weeks since I did this. But and not one of them was in a positive way either. But most of them were being uttered by Israelites and would fall under the, you know, that was a Jewish colloquialism, which it was. And, you know, it was used as a derogatory term by the Jews. And that's what you find in those. So all I looked at was the Torah and the prophets. And, again, I may have missed some. I didn't sit there with a Hebrew copy of the Torah and prophets and go through and look for the word mole and arel in every one. What I did was use Logos and did a search for them. And I have seen them in the past where it does miss a thing or two. For whatever reason, it's, you know, not perfect software. So if I did, you know, I'm apologizing. You know, please send me that. I'd love to correct it and add it in, because I do plan on writing this up as a small document to include on the Yada Yada forum. But the fact that we have, I think, close to two dozen verses, or not verses, but sections we've read from today, you know, last count, it was something like 24, 25 sections. You know, most of them mentioned it in multiple verses, but at least, you know, not one of them. You know, did we read anything today that put uncircumcision in a positive light or circumcision in a negative light?
No, I said it was fairly consistent.
Yeah, it's fairly consistent throughout. And, you know, it's like people argue, you know, how do you know that, you know, this is trustworthy? Yeah, with all the changes that have been made, you know, what I hope. God kind of put a mechanism into his word that's kind of self-governing. People can corrupt it here and there, but he repeats himself a lot. So much to the point where that, you know, when you come across something that is completely inconsistent with everything else, you kind of take a closer look and you usually figure out where it got corrupted. And like I said, if there are any on this, then there happens to be one that does put it in, you know, uncircumcised in a positive light or circumcision in a negative light, I would be very skeptical of it, and I would love to examine it closer. So that's all of those, and we don't really get a whole lot of mention of circumcision in the Greek text, at least not from Yahusha. If I remember correctly, I lost my notes on that, but if I remember correctly, his only mention of it was in relation to circumcising on the Sabbath, when he's telling, you know, people are arguing that he shouldn't kill on the Sabbath. He equates it to, you know, do we not circumcise on the Sabbath? And of course, you know, on the eighth day, if a child is born, and on the eighth day it happens to be a Sabbath, we still circumcise him. So, again, Yahusha confirming circumcision on the eighth day. I don't believe he mentions it ever again. I could be wrong. It comes up a few times. What?
Oh, I was just going to say, in that one where, I'll ask you when we come back.
Here we go. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're in the final segment of the show today. I actually wasn't sure we'd get through everything I had prepared. We got through every verse related to circumcision or uncircumcision. I also had a list of challenges I was going to try and get to, but I think we addressed most of them on the way along the way. And really, challenges are negated when you look at what Yah said. There really isn't a challenge to be made. But we were discussing before the break, Yahusha, you, and I said the only time I think I remember him mentioning circumcision was that it was to be done on the, you know, it was okay to circumcise on the Sabbath. That was why it was okay for him to heal on the Sabbath. But you were going to say something about that, Patty.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think I was just going to agree with you.
Okay.
I can't really think of anything to add to it. I'm sorry.
You're okay. Now, I was going to say, though, it does come up a couple times in Acts, and that's in relation to Paul and, you know, whether or not, you know, his view that you don't need to be circumcised. And we see at the Jerusalem Summit, there's a whole debate on that. And, you know, one of the things in there people love to point out is that after that, they sent out this letter to people telling them what they should do upon, you know, newly entering, the way. and that, oh, well, circumcision isn't on there, therefore they were saying that you don't need to be circumcised to participate. But what they tend to ignore is that if you read right after that, they conclude with, because Moshe and the Torah are pardoned everywhere in the world, and if they want to know that, they can come to know it themselves. In other words, they were kind of doing what Yada does and what I like to do, which is, don't take my word for it. Go look what Yah said. You know, they kind of like, yeah, they did not want people doing what they're doing now, which is following what they say. They were like, yeah, there's some basic instructions, but go observe the Torah. Go look to God. He knows the right way. So that's the only real mentions of it you get in the Greek text, and that's where the whole debate comes from. So like I said, if you read through what we read through, which is every mention of circumcision in the Torah and prophets, there's no way to come to a conclusion other than Yah wants you to be circumcised. The only reason any debate exists on this is because of Paul. So, that's it. Let's try and hit a few of these challenges real quick. One I hear a lot is that, you know, circumcision is a sign of a change and that the change is more important than the sign, but if you want to get this, you know, the sign, you can. And, you know, that goes back to the whole circumcision of the heart versus circumcision of the flesh, and that circumcision of the heart's more important. And we already addressed that. That, you know, what God's saying is, no, this isn't just a sign, this is a must. You know, you can't participate in Passover without it. You nullify the covenant if you're not circumcised. You know, you can go on and on. There's no debate there. That's a no start. Let's see, we have, what about a person who is unable to be circumcised for medical or monetary reasons? People will ask that a lot. And, you know, one, I've known several people who, you know, I don't know of any medical reasons that would prevent you. But I'm sure, you know, I can't think, like I said, I don't know if there are any. Monetary, I know, you know, two or three people now who are in their 80s living on a very fixed income who found a way to go get this done because it was that important to them. And, you know, like I said, it's that desire is what Yah looks for. And, you know, say you're planning to go get circumcised. You decided you want to accept the covenant, and you're on your way to get circumcised, and you're hit by a diesel and you die. Is God going to keep you out of heaven because you weren't able to get physically circumcised? No. Yeah, it goes back to that stubborn, unresponsive. You were responsive. Yeah, you were doing it. You were responding to what he said. You know, just because you weren't able to get it done in time, you know, I don't believe that he's going to keep you out of heaven. That said, you know, who knows? Yeah, another one, what if you were circumcised but not in accord with the Torah? Do you need to be recircumcised? No. You know, there were plenty of nations that were around Israel and that traveled with Israel that were practiced circumcision. And, you know, if you were circumcised and you wanted to participate in the Passover and join with them, it didn't say you had to go be recircumcised. It just said as long as you were. So why you were circumcised isn't important to God. The fact that you got, that you do it. You know, that if you're not, that you do, and that you do your son, that's what's important. Whether you were done for medical reasons or something else, it's not that important. And I think that's all we're going to be able to get to today. We'll be doing, studying the Mikra starting tomorrow.